Thank you all. Please be seated. This is a time set for oral argument in our case number CACB 250241, State of Arizona versus Campo. Each side is allocated 20 minutes for oral argument. Appellant may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal if you wish to do so. If you wish to do so, you'll need to keep track of your own time at the podium clock. Out of an abundance of caution and to prevent embarrassment or worse, I'd ask that everyone who's here make sure their phones are turned off so our proceedings are not interrupted. We've read the briefs. We've conferenced the case. We'd encourage you to keep that in mind as you present oral argument today. Our proceedings are being recorded and will be posted to YouTube in due course. So accordingly, as you begin your presentation, please tell us your name and the party that you represent. With that, Mr. Dania, is that close? Oh, very well. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's my pleasure to be here this afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Michael Dini, and I'm the attorney for the appellant, Dustin Campo. And I apologize for my raspy voice this afternoon. Mr. Campo does not dispute that probationers have diminished liberty. He does not dispute that a sentencing court may impose conditions that promote rehabilitation, protect victims, and protect the public. But diminished liberty is not extinguished liberty. And when the state burdens speech, especially speech published on social media, the condition must be tied to legitimate probationary purposes and must be no broader than necessary. And it is our viewpoint that that did not occur here. As the court is aware, in 2022, the trial court allowed Mr. Campo to use social media subject to monitoring by the Adult Probation Department. He then used YouTube to document his life as a probationer. The Probation Department did not proceed on a petition alleging a violation of a written condition. Instead, it asked the court to impose new restrictions based on generalized claims of distraction, officer privacy and safety, and possible harm to a victim who had not opted in for post-conviction matters. The trial court then imposed new lifetime probation conditions restricting recording and dissemination, specifically video recording and video dissemination, on the YouTube site that I previously mentioned.
Counsel, let me ask you,
yes.
this is a putative appeal off of a plea.
Correct.
How do we have appellate jurisdiction?
Well, Your Honor, based upon the fact that once the defendant entered into his plea agreement, he was subject to terms and conditions of probation as monitored, obviously, by the probation department. The court in 2022 entered an order with regard to the probationer's ability to use social media subject to monitoring. And then subsequent to that, the court in 2025, the trial court at the trial court level imposed the new restrictions in the Judge Boreski order that I believe that this court has jurisdiction over at this point.
Tell me how. What's the best case that supports your proposition that we have appellate jurisdiction as opposed to being able to consider post-plea proceedings by special action?
So, Your Honor, frankly, either way, through a special action or through appellate process, I believe that this court would have jurisdiction based upon the terms and outlines of the Arizona Constitution that provide this probationer with very broad free speech rights.
Fair, but we need usually to exercise appellate jurisdiction, not as opposed to special action. We need a statutory basis, and when the rules of procedure, compliance with the rules of procedure required, those need to be complied with. They need those two things. And without at least a statutory basis, we don't have appellate jurisdiction.
Well, Your Honor, again, in terms of a statutory basis, I would point to the case law that we have used to support our contention that being Davis, that probation terms as enforced by the courts at the lower level need to comply with certain conditions and rules with regard to the nature of those
things. And I understand that, but my question is different. Our appellate jurisdiction is limited, and I get this isn't part of the briefing currently, but we need to be vigilant to make sure that we have appellate jurisdiction or we're, you know, on thin void ice, and I don't want to be on thin void ice. So that's why I ask.
Okay, I appreciate the question, Your Honor, and as the court has indicated, that's not something that's been fully briefed or contemplated in this case. I believe that we have cited specific case law applicable to this situation. The fact that the court ordered briefing provided a basis for me to assume that the court agreed that it had jurisdiction based upon the history of the case. And as a result of that, again, we did not provide the briefing that the court may have required as a result of that. And again, I apologize for not anticipating the jurisdictional question. We're certainly more than willing to provide more of a basis in writing if the court would like some supplemental briefing on the issue.
And Mr. Dini, you would agree that in the event we conclude that we do not have jurisdiction, we could address this as a special action?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Mr. Dini, could you address for me whether, regardless of the fact whether your client is on probation or not, the first provision that Judge Boreski put on him was forbidding him from photographing or videotaping within the probation offices, which are court buildings. If you or I or some other member of the public wanted to walk into the Maricopa County Superior Court building and film, they wouldn't be allowed to under the administrative order. Would you agree?
I agree with that, Your Honor.
What's the distinction between the generally applicable order that applies to the public and your client's probation condition?
Well, first of all, when I look at the administrative order seems to be addressing concerns that would apply within a court setting. In other words, no videotaping, no audio taping within a superior court setting in order to prevent the dissemination of identification of jurors, for instance, oral arguments, Rule 20 arguments, those types of things that are associated with a typical trial court setting. And I would distinguish that from a conversation in a satellite office as between a probationer and his probation officer.
So you're saying that same rule would apply to anyone? If any of us walked into a probation office and wanted to start filming, we would, in your view, we would have a right to do that?
In my view, as long as the videotaping was not disruptive of the process, and did not get to any of those types of considerations that I just outlined for the court, I believe that that's a fair assessment of my statement, yes.
And Mr. Dini, how is that a workable standard? I mean, are we to inquire as to the particular thing that this individual is filming on this given day? I mean, what prevents the court from creating a generally applicable rule that simply, and as the rule states, or as the Administrative Order 2009 states, it applies to court facilities, not merely court buildings? Why does the court not have the power under the Constitution to create a generally applicable rule rather than have to engage on this case-by-case basis of whether this person can film this thing and this person cannot?
Sure. I think that in contemplation of an order from this court, I think that the considerations of rehabilitation and safety should be paramount with regard to the context within which the court can assess the situation.
But you would agree that there are conversations and things that happen at the probation office that there would be a basis to want them to remain confidential?
Well, to a certain extent, I would agree with you, but I think that within the broad range of concerns as expressed by the probation department and opposing counsel, I think with regard to discussions with regard to testing, such as ABLE assessments, discussions with regard to polygraph testing, discussions with regard to definitions of contact with minors, et cetera. Those aren't state secrets. Those are things that the probation department, on a consistent basis, discuss with probationers throughout the terms of their probation and even create their own public records with regard to the probation process, with regard to testing, with regard to a whole panoply of issues that go on within the context of sex offender probation. I would say that in terms of developing jurisprudence in this particular situation, what the court may consider is the fact that there are potentially prohibited aspects of the probation process, such as dissemination of raw data pursuant to testing, such as an MSI test. Certainly that's to be kept within the confines of...
But so going back to Judge Beck's question, it's improper for the Supreme Court to issue an order saying no filming in the courtroom, in the probation office. If they're that explicit and say no filming in the probation office, they're not allowed to do that. We're going to have to nitpick through every time somebody wants to film. We're going to have a case in front of us.
So no, I think that the contemplated ruling does not have to go that far. What I'm attempting to delineate here is the fact that what I glean from the administrative order is something different from what probation is trying to prevent in this scenario. And I'm arguing before this court that the scenario that's being expressed here relative to a conversation between a probationer and a probation agent is something that should be allowable even under, it should be allowable without having to disturb the more central purpose of the administrative order, which is the protection of the integrity of the Superior Court process itself, rather than what's going on at satellite offices of probation. And I would also point to the fact that with regard to the
order— Is that just because there are no jurors there? Or, I mean, you could make the same argument about not filming in the courtroom, and it seems odd that we would want to address repeated requests based on certain circumstances that this isn't really necessary to protect safety. It seems like a pretty broad order that the court has the authority to issue.
Certainly, and I understand the point, and I would only again emphasize the fact of the central purpose of protecting the integrity of the court process itself. And I would also point out the fact that the probation department has not been bashful about promoting its own department and locations and names and identities and photographs of probation agents within the probation department itself. So I pointed that out with the Chronicle.
That's different than filming proceedings, though, is it not? Certainly the court posts photographs of judges and still doesn't allow video recordings in the courtroom.
So I take your point as fair, Your Honor, and I think that I certainly understand that in devising an order or decision in this matter, that there are various levels of concern with regard to this free speech rights of a probationer. Not absolute, but those rights are still there. So if there's, you know, a central issue, as the court appears to have with regard to the administrative order, certainly there's a disagreement as between what I believe to be the central purpose of that order and what your honors appear to believe. And I understand the difficulty with regard to formulating a decision based upon those types of almost, microcosmic, issues, and so I understand that.
Mr. Denny, can I ask you, at least as far as the order, I'm kind of breaking down the order into three separate categories.
Yes.
So the first one would be the restriction on filming inside the APD building, the second being the restriction on filming any treatment or testing, and then the third restriction being the photographing of APD employees in public or in your client's home. Those are the sort of the three categories that I'm talking about here. At least as far as to categories one and two, aren't those content neutral time, place, and manner restrictions?
So I would agree with the court on that. There may be some concern with regard to, well, I would agree with the court with regard to points one and two. Certainly with regard to confidential treatment settings, I would agree with the court that it's not appropriate for any probationer to be filming either the group leaders or those who are also probationers who are within that setting. I think that's a confidential setting, and I think Judge Boreski got it right in that regard.
Okay, so are you saying that insofar as what I'll call condition two, you are conceding that that's constitutional, or you are not?
Well, I think the analysis that would apply is what I suggested earlier, and that's whether or not it's appropriate under Davis, and that is the three standards, whether or not it's protective of the victim, whether or not it's appropriate rehabilitation, serves appropriate rehabilitation purposes, which I think gets to your point.
I'm kind of talking about a different question here. So you're talking about, you know, probationers, I think it's fairly well recognized, have a reduced rights to free speech, at least as so far as those reductions have some sort of nexus to a probation purpose. The question I'm asking you is, even if your client wasn't probation, even if this was a rule generally applicable to everyone, is it not a content-neutral time, place, and manner restriction which could be appropriate regardless of the fact that your client is on probation?
So I would concede that point, yes.
Okay. So is there a distinction in your mind as to the third condition, the condition that restricts your client from filming APD personnel in public or in his home? And if you would please address what level of scrutiny we ought to apply to that.
So I think the highest level of scrutiny should be applicable to that. I believe that what applies there would be a strict scrutiny based upon the fact that it's a public setting, based upon the fact that it is a public officer serving a public function. And for those considerations and reasons, I believe that not only should it be eligible to be filmed, but also produced on the internet as well.
Are you suggesting that is your argument based on the Arizona Constitution, the United States Constitution? Are you suggesting that there's a difference between those two in this context?
So certainly with regard to the Arizona Constitution, the wording indicates that every person may freely speak, write, and publish. Every person may publish on all subjects. So that's a very broad categorization and protection that's afforded by the Arizona Constitution.
You're saying that's broader than the First Amendment?
Yes.
That everyone doesn't have a right to publish
they
want?
I mean, in and of itself, I wouldn't say that in and of itself is more broad than the First Amendment, but I also believe that the Arizona Constitution may provide additional protections based upon the language that I've given to you and also based upon some limitations that may go further in the First Amendment context than they do based upon the Arizona Constitution.
And that was asserted in the Superior Court?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And you made the argument, and you made an argument about what the standard should be under the state constitution.
So, Your Honor, I don't believe that within the context of this portion of the argument that Judge Boreski addressed that. I think that
My question is whether it was raised for him to address.
Yes, I believe so, yes.
You cited State v. Stummer to the to the Superior Court.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we apply the test that was articulated in State v. Stummer to any of the conditions that we talked about?
So I think the analysis, first of all, should begin in the context of this particular individual with the fact of his conviction, the fact that his conviction was not internet-based, and that any restrictions that are placed upon him, including consideration of any bans of his use of the internet should first begin with the fact that he did not commit an internet-based offense.
Fair, but we're kind of late in the day for that, aren't we? Haven't been, there been internet restrictions of your client for kind of a while?
So they varied over time.
No, I understand that, but they existed. And, you know, we take the case as it comes to us, but that was a long time ago.
I understand it was a long time ago. Terms and conditions of probation over time are subject to change. And in 2022, he was given the ability through monitoring.
I understand.
And then in 2025, very recently, just a year ago, those restrictions were changed, and they're much more egregious than they were at the time.
Do you wish to reserve the remainder of your time?
I do not. I have 15 seconds, and that's fine.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ball.
Good afternoon. Casey Ball here on behalf of the Probation Department. I want to start with the jurisdiction question. That caught me a little off guard. You saw me on my phone looking up the plea agreement there.
It was not raised in either of the briefs, but I am vigilant, I hope, on my best days that we need to constantly confirm that we have appellate jurisdiction.
And I agree. Off the top of my head, ARS 13-4033A3 might apply. I know it's coming out of a plea deal. It just says that an order made after judgment affecting substantial rights. He's alleging an order affecting substantial rights as a probation condition. I've seen that provision used in probation revocation appeals before.
Which are, in my mind, a sort of different type
slightly
of
different
thing.
I would agree, though, that there needs to be some legitimate avenue for appellate review. Otherwise, you could have a totally unconstitutional provision ordered by the trial court that would be unreviewable, and that can't stand. So,
in the state's view, though, we can proceed by special action if we answer that question that we don't have appellate jurisdiction.
So I want to clarify probation department's view. Yes. And I know that was something we needed to clarify there. But, yeah, if for some reason 4033A3 doesn't apply, I think special action jurisdiction would be appropriate. Alternatively, it might be just under the post-conviction relief rules as well, petition.
But that's
review.
Quite a different alternative than special action.
I agree. But I do think there needs to be some avenue. Turning to...
Could you go to the third bucket? Judge Beck raised the filming in the probationer's home.
Yes. So under the condition, the probationer cannot... video film the probation officer in his home or in public areas. He can audio record, and then he cannot post that audio recording or any video recordings. He shouldn't be making them anyways under the condition, but can't post those to YouTube. It seems as though we're in agreement that the Davis standard applies, sort of, but then at the end it seemed as though appellant was arguing that there is some greater scrutiny under the Arizona Constitution. As I noticed in my supplemental brief, you have to do more than just assert that there's some broader protection under the Arizona Constitution. I listed three or four cases where the courts have said, well, yeah, the parties said that there's greater protection, but they didn't explain how.
Well, and you cited to James, if I'm not mistaken. What about Mountain States Telephone and Telegraph, where it pretty clearly says that if the parties invoke the Arizona Constitution, then we must start there.
Yes. So as I noted in my footnote, it's not clear in the opinion and the briefing's not available on Westlaw how much they invoked it and if they did describe it. Subsequent case law has held that you need to do more than just do a passing invocation. You have to show how. I cited the Martin case, which I think is probably the closest analogous case here, which is the sexually violent persons case, where the court analyzed it under the federal constitution and said, you know, we're aware, we've got this case out there that says there's greater protection, the wording's different. The parties haven't explained how in this context it would be different, and we can't discern it either, and so we're not going to address it.
So let's say, for instance, we conclude that it's not adequately pled. We still need to analyze it under the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
Correct? So under the U.S. Constitution, as I understand it, there must be some sort of reasonable nexus between the restriction on the probationer's free speech rights and a legitimate probation purpose. What has APD shown is the legitimate nexus between the prohibition on videotaping APD officers in public or in the probationer's home and a legitimate probation purpose?
So a few things that they've shown. The first is that once given permission to use devices, the probationer here abused those privileges by filming the clothed genital area of his probation officer, posted it to YouTube, and then engaged with the sexualized comments about the probation officer. So we've got a probation.
So is that's a probation violation?
It is an abuse of his privileges under the conditions that were given to him, the internet use conditions. He's now violating the one-party consent statute cited by the parties, which includes surreptitious or non-surreptitious recording and publishing of private areas, including clothed genital areas.
So that's the only thing you're relying on. What else do you have other?
So in addition, and this goes more towards bucket two, but I think is relevant to the considerations for bucket three, we have the repeated filming or recording of the therapeutic sessions, which led to him getting kicked out of the commissions.
I'm more interested in bucket three.
And I understand that. I think they're related because it's showing a pattern of abusing the privileges given in the device in particular. The purpose of probation is rehabilitation. And if you can't work with the probation department, if you're fighting them, if you're harassing the probation officers, you can't work through the rehabilitation. And that's the problem.
So does that permit you to essentially take away all of his First Amendment rights?
No, I think it needs to be narrowly construed, which is exactly what Judge Bresky did here. The condition imposed directly related to the harassment that was going on, the publishing of the videos of the clothed genital area. By allowing him to still audio record, he can still record his interactions for his own purposes.
You used the word harassment.
Yes.
Are you using that in the criminal sense?
Civil or criminal. As I was reading through the one-party consent statute, I think he did violate the criminal statute there for recording the clothed genital area. The probation department didn't allege that below as a condition or a reason to revoke condition, but language.
Yeah, let's talk about the reasons that the probation department did allege. Officer safety.
Yes.
How is recording an officer going about the public's business in public or in the probationer's home imperil the officer's safety?
So if the probation officer is going into the home or out in the public engaging with the defendant and he's able to record her genital area and then post that online, causes embarrassment, causes concerns of safety for the officer. We listed some of the comments in the YouTube that the defendant engaged with. They're not decent comments. They're not something I'd want to repeat here. But it causes substantial, not just embarrassment, but I think real concerns for safety. You have a person who has been convicted of a sex offense, now sexualizing his female probation officer. She has to interact with him both in the probation office and out in the public.
Based simply on the camera angle?
I think it's a combo of the camera angle plus posting it after. I mean, he alleged, I was laying in bed. That was just happened to be the camera angle. But then he posted the video onto YouTube and then engaged with the comments discussing and sexualizing the video. This isn't a situation where the probation department is asking that he can't comment on probation generally or his journey. It is, and Judge Bresky's order specifically limits him from this particular conduct, the posting of a video that could lead to harassment, sexual objectification of the probation officer.
But that extends to the next visit, someone comes to his home, a different probation officer. What's the nexus? Just because there was one incident, we're not going to allow any filming?
So, and I got to be careful here because we're, based on what was before Judge Bresky at the time, there was just the one video, I believe, of the groin angle. There were, I think, multiple recordings of the probation officer. Generally, some of the comments talk about the probation officer never changing her clothes or something like that. So it seems
to me...
But
that's not a comment by the probationer. That's a comment by a member of the public.
Correct.
Someone on YouTube, right?
But then liked by Mr. Campo. He's engaging.
I mean, the video itself is not obscene. It's not unprotected speech, is it?
The video is focused on the clothed genital area. If we're looking at the one-party consent statute, that's criminal conduct under that statute. I don't know that it rises
about the constitutionality of that statute.
Yes, yeah. I don't know that we've had any case law discussing whether that fits into obscenity.
And filming a clothed person, in your mind, can meet the standard of obscenity to be unprotected speech?
If not obscenity, then certainly harassment. And as cited in my supplemental brief, A.B. Brown, harassment is not protected under the First Amendment. So where you're sexually objectifying...
What in your mind is the harassing conduct there? What is the probationer doing that qualifies as harassment in that scenario?
It's the things he's liking. So, for example,
so it's not just the filming. It's the fact that there's the engaging online and liking lewd inappropriate comments. Is in your view?
It's more than the filming. It's that he posted the video focusing on her genital area, and then engaged in those comments. I don't know that you could limit it to one act here. The probation department looked at the entire conduct here and said, look, we've got to get some conditions that better control his use of the devices here.
If a person who's not on probation, just a general citizen, member of the public, photographed a fully clothed person but focused on their genital area, that's a criminal act in your mind?
I mean, and I wish I had the statute up right now, but it talks about filming the genital area of a person clothed or unclothed. I can provide that later for you. It's in the briefing, the statutes listed, the one-party consent statute. So at least the legislature has detailed that.
But is that a basis that Judge Boreski relied upon in issuing his order?
It's not listed in the under advisement ruling. All it says in justifying bucket three, as we're calling it, is due to safety reasons of the probation personnel, he is specifically prohibited from video recording or disseminating. He didn't get into detail about the what constituted the safety reasons. The probation department argued that it's the sexualized nature of the content, his interactions, and that there is a pattern of escalation here over the last couple of years that they were really focused on.
Was there an argument that it was criminalized harassment to the trial judge?
I don't believe so. I'd have to go back and look at the pleadings on that. I don't think it was.
Is it a content-based restriction?
I'm torn on this one. There are some federal cases suggesting that statutes prohibiting filming police in public are content restrictions because it's focused on a particular interaction with a particular person in their public duties out in the public. To the extent we're talking about filming outside of the courthouse, I don't know that we're getting into a time, manner, place restriction there.
Well, I mean, because he's free to film anyone he wants in public, anyone he wants in his home, just not an APD employee, correct?
Correct. The probation personnel.
So if it is a content-based restriction, it's not a secondary effects content-based restriction as Strummer was.
Well, and that's where I'm struggling with this, because Strummer, the regulation was you have to close your business for a certain number of hours, but the purpose of it was the secondary effects, the prostitution, right. The stuff. Here, the secondary effect is the harassment, the public safety. So
But isn't the restriction directly aimed at stopping the speech? It's not aimed at the secondary effects. It's aimed at the speech, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
So do we employ strict scrutiny?
If it was just a member of the public with, no diminished liberty, I think that we'd probably be under strict scrutiny. But
so what?
We're under Davis.
Okay. So and what level of scrutiny do we apply? Because at least under Packingham versus North Carolina, a probationer does have still some First Amendment rights.
Correct.
So what level of scrutiny do we employ to the bucket three?
So I think it's the same Davis principle. So Packingham is not a probationer case. That's somebody who has served their full sentence and has no diminished liberties interest at that
point. He was a registered sex offender.
Yes, and that's slightly different, a registered sex offense versus not being able to use the internet. That was just a condition placed on anybody who's a registered sex offender can't use the internet. Here we've got a probationer who has a deferred sentences for molestation. He's looking at 10 years in prison as the alternative to probation. He has a diminished liberty interest. So we're under the Davis framework, the Kessler framework there, which is that it needs to be reasonably related to the goals of probation, which is rehabilitation, public safety. So I think we're certainly in the reasonableness standard here. These are narrowly tailored restrictions. He's still allowed to audio record. He's still allowed to access social media, access the internet, talk about his probation journey. What he can't do is post his interactions.
When you're saying rehabilitation, so the filming clothed groin area, how does that tie into rehabilitation?
So if you are constantly at battle with your probation officer and harassing them, you're not going to progress in probation. You're not going to be rehabilitated. If you're not able to work with your probation officer at all, and in fact are actively embarrassing and harassing them through these videos.
Judge Bresky could issue an order that you have to be nice to your probation officer?
I mean, you have to work with them. The probation department...
Is he refusing to work with them, or he's just doing so in a matter that the probation office finds annoying?
If, for example, and to take a physical version of this, let's say part of the probation conditions is you have to inspect the home. And every time the probation officer goes to the home, the probationer refuses access or threatens or in some way intimidates the probation officer that they don't feel safe going into the home. Home inspections are part of the probation process. You have to be able to go into the home and inspect it. If you're, I think, under that kind of a situation, it would be entirely reasonable for the court to impose either, you know, more rigorous conditions or more tailored conditions to allow access, because it serves the purposes of rehabilitation. You've got to check in on the defendant here. Same thing here. If the probation officer feels uncomfortable going into the home because they're going to be filmed surreptitiously and then sexualized later on the internet for anyone to see and comment on, that's a problem. The probation department has to be able to protect their personnel. That's part of the reason for the administrative order, and I know we're not really in bucket one, but in bucket one, the administrative order specifically talks about creating a safe work environment for judicial employees. Judge Bresky's condition here allows the defendant to still engage with the public and tell his probation journey while protecting the safety of the probation officers.
Counsel, let me ask you back to bucket three, and again, working from the minute entry, and I'm thinking there are actual conditions in terms of probation that specify this, but we've talked around just a little bit. Can record only any interaction with probation personnel? And I get that you're wanting to defend that, but then it says or others.
I noticed that today. I can't defend that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so.
I can't defend that at
That's
all.
That's helpful. Thank you.
And what I would put in here, my answer to this is that when you read this as a whole, it's clearly more targeted towards the probation personnel. I don't think the probation department could in any way enforce this against recording the public at large.
And Mr. Ball, you've made the point a couple of times, filming surreptitiously. Is this order narrowly tailored enough in that, I mean, it forbids him from filming any employee in basically any context, whether he announces to them, whether he's got a large video camera on his shoulder. Is this specific order narrowly tailored enough to pass First Amendment scrutiny, given that it is not limited to merely surreptitious recording or recording of a particular area of the body, but in fact is all video recording, whether in public or in the probationer's home?
You know, I haven't seen any cases that get that granular with a recording condition. There's not very many recording regulations out there. Most of them are in the context of filming the police out in the public, which is very different. You know, we've got a probationer here. Given his conduct, which was before Judge Bresky, and what was before the court, I think this is narrowly tailored enough. It's not clear to me in the record exactly how the recording was happening at the therapeutic settings. It does, I've seen in other cases where there's a lot of surreptitious recording at those therapy when it ends up with them getting kicked out because of that. As far as in the home, again, I don't have a good record here to know exactly how surreptitious it was.
Mr. Ball, is the recording in the record, or do we simply have the descriptions of the recording from the hearing?
Unfortunately, the motion hyperlinked to the YouTube video. The trial court had the YouTube video, but when it was removed after this order, it is no longer in the record. It wasn't admitted as an exhibit, and as an exhibit in any other way.
And Mr. Ball, while we're talking about the record, your friend has filed a motion to supplement the record with a publication by the APD. Did not see a response from you on that. Does APD have any objection to granting that motion?
I don't see it as particularly relevant. I don't object to it, but it wasn't before the trial court. If you're looking at what the trial court did, some of this is reviewed de novo, but it's going to be reviewed de novo on the record that was before the trial court. That wasn't before the trial court at the time it made its decision. It came after. As far as the merits, it's really not that relevant. It's a publication of the probation department. It's not, you know, a video of somebody's groin posted on YouTube. So it's of minimal relevance anyways. See, I'm running out of time. I want to make sure
Ball,
I answer your questions.
Let me interrupt you. We will we'll grant you and your opposing counsel each two additional minutes. So please take the time that
okay.
you need within well, those confines.
Did the court have any questions on whether this was the appropriate procedure, moving to modify versus a petition to revoke? I know that got covered in the briefing. I'm happy to address that if the court has any questions there.
I don't think we did.
Okay. No. I think unless the court has questions on bucket one, the administrative order, I think that was covered fairly extensively.
Is that a content neutral time, place, and manner restriction?
Yeah.
And as for bucket two, the filming of therapy sessions, that time, is that also a content neutral time, place, and
yes.
manner restriction?
Yeah, that's just a blanket ban on filming in those places. Okay. What I would note with both bucket one and two as well is that these are not public areas, and that changes the analysis quite a bit. It's not something that's out in the public sphere.
Non-public forum analysis is what we ought to be using.
Yes.
Do we employ the Mountain States requirement of narrow specificity?
So if you're going under the Arizona Constitution, maybe. And again, I'd argue that that's a ban and you shouldn't be addressing that here. We cited a couple of district court cases. They're unpublished, talking about filming in judicial settings, and they don't employ the narrow specificity.
In your mind, do those first two conditions meet the narrow specificity requirement if we were to decide it applies?
Yes, because, well, at least as to condition one, there is an escape hatch where you can get judicial permission to record certain things. So to the extent it's a broad ban on recording, there is a way that if you can show, you know, good cause for recording, you can get that permission. As for two, those are private settings. It goes right to the purposes of probation, the therapy, any kind of recording like that would chill speech and be a serious detriment, and I've seen several cases now where that's been really the issue that led to the revocation, is that probationers want to record these settings and it chills the speech of others in that group setting.
And your escape hatch is the prior approval of the presiding judge, is
yes.
correct, for bucket one?
Yes.
And that's not been invoked here, at least from the record presented.
Not that I'm aware of. Does the court have any other questions? In that case, the probation department would ask that you affirm the conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Deeney, we have afforded you a couple additional minutes, too, that is, if you wish to use those.
Just a couple of points for the court. My understanding, based upon a review of the record, with regard to the videotaping by the probationer within his bedroom, was that this was not a surreptitious recording, that this was something that occurred as my client, Mr. Campo, was laying in his bed. The probation officer entered his bedroom and my client filmed using his camera the interaction between himself and the probation officer.
Mr. Deeney, we don't have the recording in the record, do we?
No, we don't, but...
So where would I look in the record to confirm the description that you just gave us?
Sure. It would be, I believe, within the context of probation officer memorandums to the court. I believe there is a description that was given by the probation department in a memo to the court, and this situation is actually described.
What's your response to the assertion that it's not just the filming it, but it's posting it and then engaging in conversation in a suggestive manner that creates an uncomfortable environment for the probation officer for future visits.
Sure. I think that the discomfort of the probation officer is something that, without being crass, actually goes with the job. And unfortunately, those types of interactions that are part of a constitutionally based and protected publication may be something that is to be expected. I don't think that the probation department in court had the authority to sweep as broadly as it did based upon this one interaction, based upon this one posting, and based upon comments being made by other individuals. I also think that in terms of this court considering its ruling on this particular aspect of the case, it can impose appropriate restrictions on probationers with regard to intentionally sexualized content being posted and prohibiting that. On the other hand, taking a broad sweep and saying, no, you cannot publish based upon this incident is not appropriate.
Counsel, we appreciate your arguments. We appreciate your briefing. We will take the matter under advisement and issue a written ruling in due course. We stand in recess while the courtroom is set up for our next oral argument. Thank you.